Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Joseph G. with 12-Step Recovery and rumradio.org. Rum Radio is a big book sponsorship website and information on sponsorship on the 12-Step Recovery Program. It's taken the AA model because that's the original 12-Step model, so it relates to that to most degree, but it could be used for any 12-step program if you change out the primary information. For alcoholics, it's the big book. I think it's what's called a green book in NA or Al-Anon. It's the ODET, but the basic information on 12-step recovery is consistent throughout all the 12-step recovery programs. There's a 12-step recovery program for overeaters, Gamblers Anonymous, you name it, and there's a recovery program for something. There's even a Paranoids Anonymous. The only problem is nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. my co-host is Justin R. Justin, if you want to introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Justin R. from Houston, Texas, and I am 31 years old, and we're just trying to get a clear message about, you know, 12-step programs and get some questions and comments and trying to see what's going on tonight.
Oh, good. Thank you, Justin. Tonight, this is the first show that we're having in the air in Nashville, Tennessee. So welcome, Nashville. I know there's a lot of folks out there that will get a benefit from some of this information, if not them directly and personally. Everybody knows somebody that could do some 12-step work. I have no doubt. I believe personally my experience in the recovery program is that one of the most important, if not the most important aspects of the program is the relationship of a sponsor and a sponsee. That's how recovery started. Our two co-founders, Bill W. and Dr. Bob, got together, and it's a great story how they met. Bill W. had been sober for about 5 months when he realized that the only way he was going to be able to maintain his sobriety was intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when other activities fail. And he was alone one night in a distant town and went through extraordinary means to find someone he could work with and happened upon Dr. Bob. And when he met Dr. Bob, Dr. Bob wasn't really interested in what Bill W. had to say. He was taken back for the most part and said he would give Bill W. 15 minutes. But what could he tell him in 15 minutes to keep him sober? He had taken cure. He had been sliced and diced more than a Christmas turkey. He had been prayed over. What could Bill tell him in 15 minutes that was going to keep him sober? And Bill said, I'm not here to keep you sober. I'm here to keep me sober. And with those faithful words, I believe that was the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous and the beginning of the 12-step program. The knowledge that to really keep it, you have to give it away.
Absolutely.
You concur with that, Justin?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the message that we're trying to get more or less to people is, you know, I know some of the people that might be listening tonight are, you know, this might be a particular topic that you can relate to, but whether you know it or not, most likely you probably could because this isn't, you know, AA per se is not the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, nothing in there talks about this is what you need to do to not drink. You know, people have a misunderstanding of AA and the 12-step program. you know, that happens as a result. You know, the book refers to a design for living, a way of living by spiritual principles, you know, such as integrity and courage and hope and faith and all these different things, and by carrying this message to other people. And as a result of living this way and doing some simple things, well, we stay sober. And it's a design for living that works for anyone. You don't have to be a drug addict or an alcoholic to apply these principles or even the principles in the book. And that's why, you know, like you mentioned in Al-Anon, you know, and other different 12-step groups, they use the same principles that the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous uses. So there's a broad spectrum that this can benefit for people. In all different classes,
oh, yeah.
no matter what the addiction or, you know, your issue may be.
And everybody's got something, you know, whether it's overeating, pornography, gambling, the spectrum is so broad. It's just the natural condition of people to be dependent on something outside. And what we found is that the only way that we can overcome an addiction is a very simple term. In my mind, an addiction is something that you can't stop despite your best efforts. Once you've tried to stop something and you're incapable at that point of doing it, you're addicted. And we found that the only solution for me, and I can only talk from my own perspective, is a spiritual solution. So we had the choice of going to a bitter end or to live in a spiritual solution, which are two hard alternatives, especially for people who are not prone to spiritual understanding.
Well, you know, there's a misunderstanding today, and the misunderstanding with people that are non-alcoholic or non-drug addicts is this illusion that, you know, alcoholism and drug addiction has to do about willpower. And you see that a lot, not only with people coming in, the different 12-step programs. First of all, the people coming in don't understand. That has nothing to do with the power of their will. You know, and God, I mean, the family members and the employers and all the other people afflicted by this disease, they for sure don't understand that willpower has nothing to do with this. And you know, it's a shame because people always say that, you know, their family members and you got these great employees, but then they come drunk on the job and this and that, but when they're sober, they're great, and they just don't get it, and they want to say, why don't you just stop? You know, why can't you just stop? And people don't understand that, you know, and sponsorship, you know, that's one of the main topics that, you know, we're going to be discussing tonight and a lot on the show is the different roles and the some of the responsibilities of a sponsor. And, you know, one of those roles also is dealing with the family at times, you know, and explaining to the family the way this disease works and what it entails to let them know that, you know, the person in their life that's afflicted with this disease is very sick. You know, it's not a matter of they don't love you enough or they don't care about the job enough or the kids enough. And the reason why they get that connection, like Dr. Bob and Bill did in such a short period of time, is because, you know, like you're explaining, Bill related his experience, the things that happened to him personally, and some of the things that happened to him he couldn't explain. And Dr. Bob could relate to that. I mean, he was a doctor. He was a proctologist. You know, he was a butt doctor. But the guy was intelligent. He was good at what he did. He had a great education. But he couldn't stop. When it came to the alcohol, he could not put it down, and he couldn't understand that. So when you're in that position, in that moment of despair, and another person comes along and says, look, I've been there. Let me tell you a little bit about me. Then the guy knows that, you know what? Hey, you know what? He knows what I'm talking about. He's felt the same things I felt. He's been the same place as I've been. Well, once that connection is made, just like today, just like it happened in the old days, that connection was made. And then guess what? Dr. Bob was a little bit more responsive. Then he says, okay, well, what did you do? Why are you not the way you used to be? You know, and then he explains the program of action, you know, and that's what gives Dr. Bob the willingness to proceed with the steps because he can identify with Bill Wilson. And today, that's what we're still trying to do, is when someone comes in, they're lost and confused and full of despair and that terror and bewilderment and all these things the book talks about, and we say, hold on, breathe, and we talk for a few minutes, you know, 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes about what it was like. You know, and that guy looks at you in the eye and says, wow, man, you actually understand what I'm talking about. And then if they really have a desire to stop, they're going to ask you the next question. Well, how'd you do it? You know, and that's why people that sponsor other people, we try to use the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous as a guide, you know, and that's where this whole journey begins, is with that beginning conversation of identification. You hear what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's no one could talk to you in a way that someone has lived a certain way. Now, a lot of the doctors and people outside of the program and therapists, and, you know, and I applaud them professionally, but all they can deal with this is on a clinical, sympathetic level. Unless they've lived a certain lifestyle, they have no empathy. They cannot
They cannot emphasize.
Yeah, they can't. They don't have the empathy with someone unless they've lived the life. And then once you've done that, it takes a lot of the it puts humility into the mix. I'm not better than you. I'm not worse than you. I'm just like you. I've lived where you've been, so I can understand it more. Other than that, if you haven't lived it, it's intellectual.
Yeah, you know what? So the book talks about. I'm sorry. You know, the book, I just want, this is a very important point that you're making, is that the book mentions that, you know, doctors have to be inclined to admit their own inadequacy when it comes to the topic at times. And, you know, and if we have any doctors or any therapists listen that are not in recovery, I'd be glad for you to call in so we can talk about this. But, you know, what, Joseph, you know, I think what you're saying, and I understand, is, you know, they have a lot of sympathy for us at times. Some people do. But that empathy is where they don't understand. And people say, well, you don't need to understand this in order how to, you know. And yes, you do. You know, it's like going, let me give you an example here. You know, if my car breaks down, I'm not going to want to go to a mechanic that has read a lot about fixing cars. I'd rather go to a mechanic who's fixed a few cars. You know, when a woman gets pregnant, she's not going to go to another woman who's read a lot about pregnancy. She's going to go to a woman who's had a baby before. And, you know, and I'm not complete. Let me get this straight before someone calls in. And what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that the books and the schooling is irrelevant. Absolutely not. You know, I myself, you know, before this and some other things I'm doing, worked in the treatment field. You know, and there's a lot of things that I had to learn and you know, and certifications to get, and there was a lot of things that I agreed with and disagreed, but you know what? It has a lot of validity to it, the things they teach in school. I'm not disregarding it at all. All I'm saying is that only carries you so far. Like you mentioned, that intellectual identification only gets you so far. And without that degree of understanding, that empathy, it's very, very, very hard to reach someone suffering or afflicted with this disease. I'm not saying it – I don't think – you or I are saying it can't happen. I'm not saying that these people are not beneficial. They're professionals. They do have an understanding of what this entails. And some of them, you know, I've met throughout my life, Joseph, a lot of therapists and doctors that, you know, they're not in recovery, never been where we're at, but they've seen it so much that they have almost developed a degree of empathy by listening and engaging in so many people's life. I mean, look at Dr. Silkworth. Dr. Silkworth, the one who wrote The Doctor's Opinion, never suffered from addiction, but I mean, he was considered one of the, one of the greatest assets to Alcoholics Anonymous. He is the one who explained the medical aspect of this disease to Bill Wilson to help put all this together. And he worked with thousands of drunks and helped thousands of drunks. But you know what? Because he worked with so many, he developed that over time, and he wasn't biased and he wasn't judgmental. And I think nowadays, some of the people in this field have been desensitized. You know, they've seen so many people come in and out, the same guy come in to detox, that you can't help but to get a little jaded. And I'm not speaking, you know, once again, I'm not speaking through opinion. This is, I've had that experience myself working in this field for a little while. You sometimes get to that point. You get a little jaded because you think, man, you know, here he comes again. Here she comes again. But you know what? I got to look at my past. I've been one of those people myself.
Yes. Thank you for that. That's a good insight. And I would never dismiss the clinicians and the program that really give their all in trying to help the next sufferer. There is psychological inferences that go about, and there's no doubt about it. But my experience is that one alcoholic or one person of the same degree of addiction is probably the greatest amount of help that another person will accept.
Yeah, and you can't deny that. And, you know, and that was one of the goals of you and I, is to really, you know, get down to brass tacks and be honest about it and not sugarcoat it. That's the truth. You know, what you said is absolutely the bottom line, is there's it's the most beneficial of anything, you know.
It works the best.
Absolutely.
I'd like to take this time and the call-in number. We'd like some folks to call in if you have any questions, or whether it's on topic, or you have any questions about recovery or the 12 steps or anything that we can feel and discuss. We're just as much willing to learn from you as you from us. I think it's more productive if it's interactive. The phone number to call in is 949-534-0621. Again, that's 949-534-0621.
I just wanted to point out to people that, you know, this show is what we're talking about. We really do. And, you know, people can call in for questions or comments, but also, you know, if you have a question or comment that refers to getting help, not just discussing it, but, you know, no matter where in the country you are, through Joseph and I, we've, you know, have a lot of contacts all over the country, you know, friends we've made through the program. So if you're one of those people, or yourself or a family member that may need treatment or need help finding meetings or anything like that, please feel free to call in for help or information in any of those matters also. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, and it's all confidential. We don't need your last name. We can give you another number to call, and you can talk to us privately if that's the case too. So always feel free to do that. We understand how the anonymity works. It's essential in the program. Anonymity is not only to protect your persona in the public, it's also a form of humility, that no one can speak for AA. This is not, we're not affiliated with AA per se.
No.
There's no one person that speaks for the program. We do not do that.
We're not spokespeople. We're not getting paid by Alcoholics Anonymous or any particular AA club.
No. No. Well, my credentials are like this. I have no letters after my name, no certificates of completion, and no degrees, but I have spent the night at a Holiday Inn Express.
Makes you qualified.
That's it. You know, it's hard knocks. I lived the deal and have come out on the other side one day at a time. It's a great way of life. I'm going to go with this. Sometimes the question is, especially new in recovery, my experience is this. Like the rest of the world, 20% of the people are doing 80% of the work. And that find that with sponsorship. And I think part of the problem is that when people really want to get recovery, when they're in enough pain and they've made the decision that they're going to do whatever is necessary to get and stay sober, and whatever your addiction might be, that it doesn't really matter as greatly who your sponsor is or what they do. And you'll go through and you'll hopefully work the steps and you'll get through, but you wanted it so bad, so you'll take any instruction. Now, if some time goes by and it's your turn to give back, you're really not quite sure how you got through the program. You know you're staying sober, but you're not really giving back. And you'd like to sponsor, but you're really not quite sure what to do with it. So you're staying sober, you have a good life, you go, look, is that not enough? I don't have the time, and I really don't know what I'm doing, and I don't want to take the accountability or the responsibility for another human being. You know what? I think I'll pass. Is that your experience, Justin?
Well, you know, I've been there, and I can't speak for everybody. You know, I can speak for myself, because in the past, you get that sense of complacency. You know, I got comfortable. You know, you get comfortable where you get sober, you get out of that, you know, that misery and out of that pain, things get better. And, you know, and you start chairing a couple meetings here and there, you know, and maybe, you know, do this temporary sponsor thing, which, you know, I agree to disagree with some people. You know, I had a guy say, well, if you want to be temporary sober, get a temporary sponsor. You know, and there's all these, you know, and either you're going to sponsor someone or you're not, you know. And the funny thing is that for a long time, you know, I felt kind of pressure. You know, I was like, oh, man, you know, I don't want to screw up anybody. You know, I don't want to be the reason why, you know, give some goofy advice or say the wrong thing that's, you know, not in the book, or give the wrong advice and then, you know, something happens.
And somebody dies.
Yeah, somebody dies. And, you know, what I didn't realize is, you know, is that first of all, when people come in the program, you're not going to mess them up any more than they already are. I mean, I could just think back when I came in, you know. And the other thing is that's why the lineage of sponsorship is so important, is because, you know, when I started sponsoring people, you know, I would use my sponsor a lot as like a reference. You know, it was almost like my sponsor, you know, was taking my sponsee through the steps too. Now, when it came to private information, you know, I didn't share that because that's the trust that me and the guy I'm working with has. And, you know, and he's got a trust that I'm not going to go run to my sponsor and tell him all his business. But as far as advice or, you know, keeping things in line with taking them through the steps, you know, in the beginning, it was back and forth, back and forth. You know, the guy I'm working with comes to me and, you know, I'm like, well, what should I do? So what do? I call my sponsor. And I know for a fact there's times where he's called his. And that's how this whole network works, you know. And I don't want to ever get to the point, you know, where I think that I know so much and I'm so spiritually fit that I know everything. And my sponsee, there possibly couldn't be any question that they would ask me that I wouldn't know the answer to. Because that's no degree of humility whatsoever. And there's still times, you know, and there always will be times that I'll go to my sponsor or somebody else in the program and bounce an idea or say, hey, you know, what do you think about this? I got a guy, a friend of mine, that's going through this, and he asked me for some advice about that. And, you know, and I think that's important. And I think, you know, I've done it, and I've seen other people do it where the ego gets involved, you know, or the reverse happens. Yeah, the other side of the coin happens, like you mentioned, where we get so complacent that we feel, well, you know, I'll let somebody else take care of that. I'll let somebody else grab that newcomer. I'll let somebody else chair that meeting. You know, I've put in my quote-unquote work. You know, I don't even understand that, but, you know, there's people that say that, well, I've done my time. You know, this isn't a prison sentence. You know, there isn't, okay, I've chaired 22 meetings, I've sponsored 5 people, I've been to a couple conventions, I'm good to go.
I'm ready to retire,
exactly, I'm retiring now. Let's see, you know, now I understand, you know, yeah, I'm retired. Sorry, go to the next guy, I can't help you. But, you know, I understand there's people that have been around for 20, 30 years, and they're trying to pass the torch. You know, I understand that, don't get me wrong. You know, I don't want anybody listening to think, well, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years and da-da-da-da, and it's time for me to step down. No, I believe that, you know, because you get those bleeding deacons of the group that just take over everything, don't want any of the newcomers try and chair any meetings, or they want to control the situation, and that's not healthy either. You got to let people grow. Now, you know, Dr. Bob and the good old timers referred to those people like the elder statesmen, the ones that kind of sit back and watch. You know, they really don't get in any arguments about anything or have too much opinion. But when you have a question, then you go to them and ask, they're more than willing to help. You know, and those are the people that I try and flock to. You know, because it's all about a balance, you know. It's all about a balance with the old-timers, the new-timers, and sponsorship. It's just about a balance.
Well, I'll give you my take on this with temporary sponsor. I've never heard that about you get temporary sober with a temporary sponsor. To me, all sponsorship is temporary. It's either temporary for a day or temporary for a lifetime or anywhere in between. It's all temporary. Why I like to use the term temporary sponsor, especially with someone new in the program, it's psychological in the fact that he's not committing to anything that's long term. It gives him, don't fence me in. It's like a don't fence me in word. This is temporary. And it gives them the opportunity to develop a relationship with the person, and oftentimes a temporary sponsor becomes the sponsor. And it also lets them know that if it's not in between for the both of us, it has to work between the sponsor and the sponsee, then it's not working for neither if it's not working for both. So it gives them a sense of freedom of movement while there's a discipline and motivation to work the steps in a thorough yet timely manner. That's my take on that, on temporary.
Yeah, it's all relative. I get what you're saying, and, I get what you're saying. It's just, I guess what I'm saying is sometimes today, and we all have, our opinions is, I think we let people off the hook too much. I think it's, this is just my opinion. This isn't an opinion of the show necessarily or of Joseph's opinion. This is just my personal opinion. And because it happened to me. I think we should have more people around here that, keep people accountable. Why were you late for the meeting? If you said you're going to be here, show up on time. Or, when people say they're going to chair a meeting and they don't show up, ask them. Call people on that kind of stuff. And say, where were you? And I guess that's the whole reason why he made that comment to me, is saying, hey, look, time for you to be accountable. If you're going to do this deal and you're done and you want to do something different, because this is, mind you, this comment came from a guy that was almost 30 years sober. So he had that attitude still of the old timers where they were, back in the day, these guys, if you didn't want to get sober, they didn't mess with you. They asked you simple questions. They said, are you done? Yes or no? If you gave them a wishy-washy answer, they said, all right, well, there's the door. And it's not because they didn't care. It's because they viewed it as this, is that we're not going to waste our time, and we're not going to waste your time because there's another person coming along that, wants to do this. But at the same time, times have changed. And, every person's different, and I'm hip to what you're saying, because there are some people you don't want to have that attitude. You don't want to have that black and white attitude, because some people need that sense of tolerance and patience, to, for lack of better words, kind of hook them. You got to give them that little bit of leeway so they can kind of get a taste of the pie. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, basically, yeah. I hit him hard in the beginning. When I get a sponsee, I carry around Clancy 7 questions when I'm looking for a sponsee. I don't wait for the guy to come up to me and ask me. I don't like that whole concept of turning sponsorship into a dating service. Although it does work that way sometimes, where the connection is made. You hear somebody. There's that connection, and it works great, and people go with that. To me, I like to think of it the way they did it in the beginning. They went out and got their sponsees.
Mm-hmm.
Bill went to find Bob. Abby got Bill. Bob had, I think, 2 or 3 days sober when him and Bill went to Towns Hospital and got Bill D., the third member. They went out and got him. You work the steps right away, and then it was a prospect. A prospect is a sales term, a perspective where you're going to sell them an idea of sobriety, knowing that you need this sponsee to maintain your own sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
So they went out and got them, and that's the way. I have people come to me every so often, but most of the time I'll go get them. They'll get their beginner's chip. and they're hot when they get the beginner's chip. They have acknowledged the fact that they have a problem. Unless you realize there's a problem, there's no solution to be found. So they've acknowledged the problem. They've gone up. They've gotten a beginner's chip. They've identified themselves, at least to the group, in most cases. And when we circle up at the end to say a closing prayer, I try to get around to them. And then as soon as after the prayer, I ask them, have you had enough? Yes or no? If they don't know what I'm talking about, I just say it a little louder. Have you had enough? Enough pain, enough humiliation. Have you had enough? If they say yes, yes, okay. Then I'll ask them, are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? Yes. I tell them, now you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And the first thing I need you to do is to answer Clancy's 7 questions. I need these questions answered, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my number. I expect your call. And that's it.
How many, just out of curiosity, what do you think is the percentage of people that actually call back?
I would say probably with me, it was running about 70%. Now I'm probably running about 50. Lately, I hasn't been as productive. I've been sending them to the website because I hadn't had the Clancy 7 questions with me, and I think that makes a big difference right there. But I've been doing, I'd say, 50 to 60% callback. If you get them when they get the beginner's chip. I would say the majority of people I work with end up long-term sobriety. I'm nobody special. I just work a solid program with them. And I get them through quick. The goal is 30 to 45 days. That's just a goal. It's not written in stone. But I try to use the pain that they have initially where they're willing to do anything to get out of that pain. And the solution is... The 45. Yeah.
I got a quick question for you. What do you think? Because you just mentioned about taking them through and progress and all that. What do you think? And this is going to be a controversial question here. What do you think about people nowadays where instead of taking them through the big book, they give them these workbooks, and they give them these worksheets and stuff that get passed around, people download from the internet and all that. And instead of having them write it out, now they have things for, the 4-step. For just an example, for the 4-step, they have stuff you can download where it gives you all this information, and you check. You put check marks. You ever see that, where you put check marks, where you've been selfish, where you've been dishonest? And, what do you... I have a feeling what you're going to say, but...
It's a load.
But, what do you think about that?
It's ridiculous. I don't know who came up with the spreadsheet. I guess it's when the spreadsheets were the big deal. And I remember an early sponsor. I was a temporary sponsor with this guy, and he said, "Look, I'll do you as a temporary spot." He's the one who said, "Fine, I have no problem with that." And that we were doing a 4-step, and that he brought me this thing with the checklists on it, the check marks, and I'm going, "Well, I appreciate the organization," I says, "but it's really not telling me much. I really want to hear it from you one-on-one, what this means to you. A check mark really doesn't mean much to me. I understand that there's a lot of security issues and financial issues and et cetera, et cetera. So I think it needs to be a little bit more explained. As a matter of fact, sometimes I even do it a little different. The big book has to be the primary source of recovery. the big book, and I would expand it out to the 12 and 12. I think that some people don't agree with that either. They don't. I think the 12 and 12 is an essential part of recovery. It was written, I think, 11 or 12 years after the big book from the experiences of using the big book. So it's like a concordance in that sense. And I use both the big book and the 12 and 12, and I take specific readings out of the big book and specific readings out of the 12 and 12, and then give them a list of questions that are based upon the readings.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that to be very, very productive. It's not the only way to do it, but the big book has to be the primary focus of the information.
I think it's more to say, you put it very eloquently, and I'm not the eloquent one when it comes to this, but I think it's two things. One, it's just laziness. I think one is just pure laziness, is that we want to find the easier and softer way, and we don't want to write everything out, because a lot of it's redundant. You're going to write the selfish and dishonest and all these words down a million times. And the other one is, I think it might be, if your sponsor takes you through the steps a certain way, that's the only way you're going to learn how to take someone else through it. So if I got a sponsor that gives me these spreadsheets and worksheets and all that, and that's the only thing I know how to do, well, guess what I'm probably going to do, right? And I think that some people just, I'm not saying this for a harsh terminology, it's just, what the word means itself is just ignorance, just a lack of knowledge. If I don't understand how to take someone through the book, the way it's written, well, I'm only going to do it the way I know how. And I think that's why it's so important to have this show and have the website and have different, workshops and stuff that they have, like Joe and Charlie does and all these things, to inform people. Even people that have been sober 10 years, some of these people haven't learned thoroughly how to work the steps through the book. And if they did that, I think, they'd be more apt to use that. You think?
Oh, absolutely. They haven't done it. The other problem I've seen is that, when I'm introducing the website, and the website this radio show is based on is rumradio.org. Of course, this is the Rum Radio radio show, but rumradio.org is the website. And it's from what I understand and from my experience in the program, it's probably the most comprehensive site for total information about sponsorship. There's always some more stuff going around, and I was hoping for this to be sort of a clearinghouse for sponsors all over the world with tips and techniques and things that they found productive. But there's a tremendous amount of really good, pertinent information, and they're tools. And one of the phrases we have in the program is, take what you need and leave the rest. So if you're a sponsor that has a really good program, I assure you, you will find some tools, tips, techniques, and understandings that will help your program. I'm not saying to change your program or to do it as it's outlined. No. Take what you need and leave the rest. If you've never sponsored and you don't know how to sponsor, this is really good platform information. This is foundational information. It's like a Vince Lombardi playbook for sponsorship. It's a back-to-basics concept for today. And you adjust it to the sponsee, and the only way you're going to be able to adjust things to the sponsee is you're going to have to start to sponsor. The only way you're going to get to be a good sponsor is you've got to sponsor. You're going to make mistakes. Welcome to the club. You're human. You'll learn from these mistakes, and we move on. And eventually, you'll get better. Not perfect, but you'll get better the more times you get to sponsor. And the benefits outweigh the effort by far. But the thing is, you have to be involved. Dr. Bob had 5,000 sponsees. It's almost unimaginable today.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how committed these people were. He was committed. And Dr. Bob was a religious man. That's the interesting part about it. Bill was not, but Dr. Bob was a religious man. And even though with all his convictions and his Bible learning from a very young man, he still was not able to thwart off alcohol and its eventual butcher's bill. So I think a lot of people need to recognize that. Some churches, my church too, they grab the 12 steps and they reword them to their understanding, and then they almost turn around and tell you, you're not working it right. You know, like, please. If the big book is a spiritual work from God, why are you changing in it? And if it's not a spiritual work from God, why are you adopting it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's been, you know, a lot of people, you know, you got those two sides of the fence. You got one side of the fence that always refers to the 12 steps, it's Christian base, and this and that, and some comes from biblical meanings and all this. And it's funny because, yeah, there are some things, but there's also the medical side and there's the psychiatric side, you know. Bill Wilson was very smart when he put this book together, that he got information and he got suggestions from all three sides. You know, and there are these, they have today now these special needs groups. You know, there's a group now called Celebrate Recovery. A friend of mine out in Crosby, Texas, he's involved in that. And what it is, it's the 12 steps. And the only thing that's been changed is instead of it saying higher power, they say Jesus Christ, which, you know, is fine. And that's a place for people to go. They still use, you know, a lot of the same principles. It's been altered a little bit to fit the specific need of the people searching for that specific need. And I don't see anything wrong with that. I still wish people would still go through the steps the way it's outlined in the big book and then go on to something like that, but that's just my personal opinion. But, you know, the problem that I have is people that use the 12 steps and completely alter them, put them in different order, they take out certain things, put in other things, and, you know, and then they say it's 12-step related, and it's really not. You know, that particular group, the reason why, you know, I support them is because the only thing that's been changed is where they say higher power, they use their particular higher power that they believe in, and I don't see anything wrong with that at all, because in essence, it's really the same thing. It's just a group of people that believe that their higher power is Jesus Christ. Some people believe in Buddha. Some people believe in Allah. Some people call it the source. You know, some people are atheists, agnostics. You have people that believe in all different types of higher so-called beings or power, whatever you want to call it. And that's just a particular group that focuses on one particular one. The problem is when you have all these people trying to rearrange and take out things, and disregarding where it originally came from. You know, I think people forget, you know, that CA, Cocaine Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Al-Anon, Overeaters Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, and so on and so forth wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. And all I'm saying is I think we should show a little bit of respect and look a little bit into that, you know. That goes for anything. You know, if you're into cars or you're into guitars or whatever it may be, you still have respect for the old ones, for the original. You hear what I'm saying?
Right. That reminds me about the spirituality. There was this fella that was an atheist, and he lived a good life. And, you know, an atheist is someone who says there is no God, and the agnostic is someone that says there might be the atheist says there is no God and lives like there is one, and the agnostic says there might be a God and lives like there isn't. And as an atheist, he lived a good life. He did the next right thing because that was made his life better. And his hobby was fishing in exotic lakes all over the world. And one late afternoon, the Loch Ness Monster came up to the fisherman and threatened to destroy him. In a moment of terror, the fisherman looked up at the sky and yelled, "Lord, Lord, please save me." And the heavens opened up and the Lord was heard to say, "I thought you didn't believe in me." And the fisherman looked up and said, "Lord, give me a break. 2 minutes ago, I'd have been the Loch Ness Monster either."
You know, and it's funny because you got all types of people, and you know, and I was one of those people that said, you know, there's no such thing as an atheist if you put a gun to someone's head. But you know what? It's interesting because I've made those comments many, many years ago, and you know, and I've met people through 12-step programs that truly, truly are atheists, that they do, they still believe in something, whether it be love or whether it be some kind of power in the universe or whatever it may be, something that there's something out there that is still greater than themselves, that they are not the, the alpha and omega of life, you know. And it's funny because when you think about it, I mean, how arrogant to think that we're it, you know. I mean, and some people might be offended by that comment, I'm sorry, but it's true. I mean, how arrogant to think that, that we're it. But at the same time, you know, you can go on the same other side of the spectrum and say, well, how arrogant is it to say that I'm right about my God and you're wrong about yours, you know. And that's one of the blessings of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12-step programs, is it doesn't get into that debate. You know, we don't have time for that debate. We don't get in that controversy. You know, that's not a requirement for you to particularly believe in anything, you know. And that's great, because the process creates the result. You know, just by taking, that's why we always talk about a program of action, is by taking the action, by doing the process, that's what gives us a result. And when we get those results, in turn, that develops, that creates our belief structure. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Bill W. Said that AA was spiritual kindergarten. And I really believe that you have to start with milk before you can eat meat. I think that's kind of essential. People choke if too much religion is given to them. A lady had written to me on the website, and she was a Buddhist, and she was kind of upset about the fact that the rumradio.org website was on the 11th step. Prayer and meditation. Well, that has a spiritual connotation to it. It just does. I mean, that's trying to connect up with your higher power. It's not naming them. And she had a hard time where, you know, I'm a Buddhist. I don't tell Catholics how to pray or how to meditate, and why do I have to get down on my knees and all that. So she took really a big exception to it. So I answer that, and I answered, and I'll give you the last paragraph on this. I think it's very powerful. Friend in early recovery related his experience in a meeting once upon a time. David said he was speaking to God as one man talks to another in an animated, ongoing conversation. He paused and reflected that he was not really talking to God, that he was just talking to himself. And then he said he heard a still, small voice that said, "I am you, but you were not me." Love and service is our goal, while love and tolerance of others is our code. I would suggest not embracing the differences, for we are one in purpose, to stay sober and help the next sufferer. We have the extraordinary opportunity to be the hands of God, as you understand hands. The other point was that me trying to describe God was like asking a fish to describe the water it swims in. That's not our business to tell you what God is or is not. This is a personal understanding that you will come to, and that understanding will help you grow. When I have a sponsee, and of course, Jesus Christ is my higher power. And I had a Jewish kid one time wanted me to be his sponsor. And he said, you know, and we prayed, and I did it in the name of Jesus Christ. And he said, you know, I really want you to be my sponsor, but I'm Jewish, and that Jesus Christ deal really throws me off. And I said, look, kiddo, you could pray in Hebrew. I says, if you were an atheist, we're still going to have to pray. But if you don't know who to pray to, we can do it to whom it may concern. So these are the baby steps we take to get into an understanding of a spiritual life. Then we grow from there. This is the beginning of it. Here's the milk. This is milk. Now, if you want to, the opportunity is there, and that growth will give you more and more. Where much is given, much will be expected. As we grow in spiritual spirituality, we're supposed to also grow in effectiveness.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times I think you have these misunderstandings. You know, we take things out of context. I view prayer as simply talking to God or talking to something else. You know, and meditation, simply put, is listening. And sometimes, you know, when it comes to prayer, when people hear that word, you know, they cringe. And, you know, and I had one guy that I worked with, just very intellectual person, and I said to him, you know what, I said, why don't you just think about saying, you know what, you want all these good things to happen, and you get in these situations, you don't have to say, dear God, you don't have to say this, you don't have to say that. Why don't you just try something crazy and just say, you know what, this is what's going on. I'd really appreciate it if you could show me an answer for this. And not refer to anything in particular or ask for anything in particular. And, you know, in essence, what I asked them to do was just put a positive thought. Just put a positive thought of action, you know, in the place and speak it out loud and see what happens with that. And, you know, it's funny because whether you want to take the spiritual side of that, you know, we can get into that, or if you want to take the medical side of that, you know, our thoughts and what we think and what we put out in turn brings things back. You know, and it's, we don't have enough time to really get into scientific proof and studies, and that's a whole other conversation right there. But by putting positive things out there and thinking positively, what happens is we, as a result of that, start doing things and taking action to make those things happen. And I don't think people realize the power in that. When we start looking at things in a different perception, guess what happens? We start acting differently. We start doing things differently, and it's simply cause and effect. When we start doing different things, we have different effects. And, it, you know, that was the only way he could begin. But, you know what, that developed over time into something even stronger. You know, some people have to start on that basic idea of just, you know, trying to do something, think more positively, to take different action, you know, doing something the opposite of what they normally would do. And then you do have those people that come in the program and, you know, prayer is not an issue at all. You know, there's one of those people that have prayed all their lives and they have no problem getting on their knees and doing this and that, and that works for them. You know, and that's the beauty of everything that we're talking about is whatever, you know, your conception of God or higher power, whatever it may be, however inadequate it may be to you at this time, is sufficient enough to make a beginning on this.
Yes, yeah. I like to think that we think our way into right action, but we can act our way into right thinking.
Absolutely.
There's a Hebrew saying that goes, the heart follows the hand. Mm-hmm. I believe we're saved by grace after all that we can do, not after all that we can talk, not even after all that we can think, or not even after all that we can pray. The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead.
You know, that's where willingness comes in.
Yeah.
You know, because if you think about this, you know, I can think, you know, it's, for instance, opening a door for somebody. I know this is a goofy analogy, but if, you know, there's an older woman coming through the door at the grocery store, you know, I can think about opening the door for her all I want, and my intentions may be to do that. But then, you know what, if I don't do it, nothing happens, you know. But at the same time, you know, and this is what we're talking about, is that I may, you know, this is a horrible thing to think of, but what if I don't want to open the door for that lady? What if, you know, what if I'm that selfish and self-centered and I'm that pissed off at the world, you know, I don't want to do it. But here's the kicker. If I actually take the action, regardless of how I feel or think about it, and do it anyway, you know, that's where that willingness comes in, to do things that I don't want to do, but I still do them, and open that door for her, regardless of how I think or feel. Well, guess what? Over time, by taking different actions like that, doing different things like that, well, guess what? As a result, it starts to change the programming. And once that programming changes, well, our thinking changes. You know, just as the old saying, people don't judge us by our intentions, they judge us by our actions. And that's what this whole deal is about, is, you know, I'm not, the people I work with, I'm not too concerned about what they think or feel about the program. All I say is, hey, I'm asking you to take the action. If you take the action, whether you like it or not or think it's going to work, well, it does. I know it does. And then all of a sudden, they start taking the action and, you know, taking these different steps, and then things change. And guess what? When things change, your thoughts change. It's that simple.
Yeah, the I've heard this said, to know it and not to do it is not to know it. So you're back to action again.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise,
yeah,
you're just
right.
Talking. You're talking the talk and you're not walking the walk. So, well, we got about 4 minutes, 5 minutes to go. If anybody wants to make a last-minute call and save us from ourselves, it's 949-534-0621. 949-534-0621. If you weren't brave enough to call in this time, we're going to be on again next Saturday, same time. This is going to be an ongoing show, both in Nashville and through Blog Talk Radio and the Internet. We're hoping folks get something out of this. We'll be chatting about sponsorship and the 12-step recovery programs, and we'll be available to take questions and take comments of, you know, sometimes you can be a little brave, pick up that telephone and make that call.
And you can check out, you know, runradio.org. We got all kinds of stuff on there about contact, step-by-step. There's a sponsorship tab. There's captain tables tab. Let's have a meeting ourselves. We got all kinds of stuff on there. Everything from AA meetings to there's all kinds of new recent posts and resources on there and things. You got to check it out. Check it out and give
clinical.
Us your input. Clinical.
Yeah.
A lot
clinical
of information
and medical.
On there.
Yeah, it's all solid recovery. Dick B., I don't know if anybody in recovery knows Dick B. He's sort of a, I don't know, what would you call Dick B.? Sort of like a pillar of AA. And he's written in 500 books, and he's an archivist. And he's taken a look at it, and he really liked what he saw. We keep it right to program because the program works. It works when you work it. We found that rarely have we seen a person fail who thoroughly followed our path. And just like we fairly rarely see a person succeed who follows their own path. So I know this works. This is a work. I hope that you've gotten something out of this and that you'll contribute in the future. Got any last words, Justin?
No, that's it. Just check it out on Facebook and runradio.org and give us a call in. We'll be here Saturday, like you said, at 9 p.m. We'll be posting it through Facebook and the site to let people know, to remind them. And the call-in, when you call in that number, you know, you just follow the instructions on there. You can either listen to the show, or you can actually, you know, call in a question or comment by pressing 1 on your dial pad, and you'll actually be connected to me. And we can put you on the air, or if you just have a question and you don't want to be on the air, but you have a question, Block Talk Radio does have a pre-screening option, and that's what we do on this station. So we'll screen your call, and if you don't want to be on the air, we can still discuss your question. So just to let people know, there can be complete anonymity. So check us out and give us a call in and give us some input. We're always open to new input, new questions and ideas. That'll be it for me.
Okay. Well, the number one fear is speaking in public, more so than the death of the body. But it really makes sense if you stop and think about it, because the death of the ego is found in ridicule. And ego will sacrifice the body on the altar of pride in a vain attempt to stay alive. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. So don't worry about calling in. We're just a couple of garden variety folks here trying to do the best we can to be of maximum service to God and our fellows. The credit for this work goes to God and the fellowship, and in gratitude. I believe that a attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God. So thanks, folks, for listening in, and I hope we can become a regular staple. Need your input as much as we need to talk. Thanks again, and have a good evening.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
Bye.